instead of sister cities, I think I might go with, like, friends with Benny's cities. Because I think sister city seems like it's already been addressed.
Yeah.
We're giving you a little bit more.
Okay. Friends with Benny's.
I think the Bronx is a good-looking city. Mm-hmm. I think Glasgow is also a good-looking city. I think we could have some nice things going on. Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmari, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
But for a little while, sister cities.
Yes, sister cities. We were talking about this concept, and we decided to give a priority.
Yes,
priority. Hey, you know it. Time
spend some time on talking about sister cities. So the first time I heard about sister cities is when I was living in Hungary, and there's a town called Debrecen, which is like on the eastern part of Hungary in the Pusta, which is like the plains.
Okay, and is it like hick town?
No, it's a city, though.
Oh, okay.
But it's a small city. And they have a really nice university. They have a lot of spas because there's mineral water there.
Oh, God.
It's really far away from everything, all the rest of the action in Hungary.
Okay.
So they're all the way out on the eastern plains. And what they decided to do was to have a lot of sister cities. So the 2 weeks I was there, because they have one of the best Hungarian language institutes in Hungary. I mean, they're not going to really be anywhere else except for Hungary. Every couple of days, they would have groups coming from their sister cities, like from China, from Africa, and they were just celebrating. So the way that they dealt with being isolated from Budapest and from the other Miskolc and the other major cities was just to be like, fuck it, and we're gonna make connections with other cities.
That's around awesome. The world. It's kind of like having pen pals.
Yeah, it's kind of like a pen pal, but for a city.
Yeah.
Right. So sister cities, I did a little research on it. They're also called twin towns.
Okay.
And they are a form of legal or social agreement between cities, towns. You could be counties, prefectures, provinces, regions, states, whatever kind of geographical, you know, situation you want to put together. And sometimes they can be, you can do some in the same country, right? So you could have, in a large country, you could have sister cities with them. But usually it's with another, you know, another
nation.
It's
international.
Yeah, it's international. So, yeah. So the idea of it was conceived after the Second World War to try to foster friendship and understanding between different cultures and as a way to try to get people to get together and not just having everything at the level of government.
Right. It was like a citizen diplomacy movement, which is fantastic and forward thinking.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah.
So in the UK, they call them twin towns. In the United States and other places, they're referred to as sister cities. There's also the term partnership towns or partner towns. And like you were saying, originally they were kind of like a way for citizens to engage with other citizens from another area. But since the 2000s, they've become more about economic opportunities.
Yeah.
Right? So like, I looked up Baltimore. Baltimore has like 9 sister cities and they're all port towns.
Oh.
So they can share information about, you know, how they've been dealing with whatever the new things in ports are, how to transition from being just a port-only economy to another kind of economy, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you can have these alliances, which can also result in a lot of power. So you can say, all of our port communities are not going to allow certain boats to come
exactly.
in. So if you don't give us what we want.
It's also called city diplomacy, which kind of harkens back to the city-state era. You know, you think about, like, Roman city-states and things like that. Of cities having problems or not always just problems, but the things that are important to cities, governances, the people who are there from one city are also applicable to other cities. Mm-hmm. And you might not have the same kind of ties to the countryside. Mm-hmm. Right. So you look outside. So the earliest known twinning in Europe was between Paderborn, Germany and Le Mans, France in 836. So extremely
836
forward thinking.
Oh my God. Don't you ever get a breath?
I guess not.
What are you going to do? How can you even have a day for each one? You can't. You have to have like 3 a day.
No. In 836, the year.
Oh.
I
thought they said 836. No.
Some places do have a lot of sister cities.
Yeah.
But this is like, so in 836, a town in Germany and a town in France were like, let's do this.
Okay, got it.
Let's make this happen. And then in modern history, It was in 1905 between a town in Yorkshire, England, and then another town in France. And then after the First World War, more of this happened. And after the Second World War, even more of it. And but it didn't become a formal thing for a lot of places until like the 80s. So it was just kind of a goodwill thing. And in order to have a sister city, whoever the highest appointed or elected official is of your city or prefecture or whatever, they make an overture to another city, and they kind of agree upon it.
I want to do that in my town, because I looked it up, and we don't have a sister city, so I'm going to pick one.
Yeah, I didn't see one for Hoboken.
Yeah.
I know that Ramapo has some.
Yeah.
I think they have, like, two.
I didn't see that, but I saw that Maryland has it.
Oh, yeah, Maryland's got a bunch
Baltimore
of them.
Baltimore does.
Yeah. I mean, Annapolis has some, too, which is our other kind of city. I looked up the Brooklyn has its own. Right, they have like four or five.
And New York City has a bunch, but I think they're insincere.
The Bronx doesn't have one.
Oh.
Staten Island has one. Queens, nothing.
I looked up New Jersey, and my favorite
one. You guys
have
quite a bit.
Yeah, my favorite one was Bayonne, New Jersey. It's
Who are they sister cities with?
Bayonne, France. But Bayonne, New Jersey is like.
Completely different.
Like, how you doing?
Yes. With Bayonne in France is something completely different.
Yeah, I love it.
That's amazing. All right, that's cool, though. Whatever. So there was also in 1947, Reading was the first British town to form a link with a former enemy city, Dusseldorf, because you know the British and the
Dusseldorf,
the British and the Germans not getting along.
No,
at a certain point in history. So there's there are ties for that. And in 1956, Rome and Paris they decided to get exclusive with it.
Really?
And their motto is, only Paris is worthy of Rome, and only Rome is worthy of Paris. They are betrothed to each other as sister cities, and they will not be sistering up with anyone else.
No kidding.
So don't even think about it.
How
bizarre.
I wonder, like, what the thinking was behind that. Being like,
they're like, we're awesome. They're awesome. Everyone else, eat it. Then here's our motto. And the European...
I want a motto. I want a sister city and a motto.
I think eat it's a good motto.
Yeah.
As of 1995, it says the EU has more than 7,000 bilateral relationships involving over 10,000 municipalities. The French have the most. They have 2,837 sister cities. Mm-hmm. And then Germany comes in with 2,485 sister cities. So they're the most prolific.
But,
you know, they get around, the French and the Germans. They say sometimes they choose a sister city or a twin town because of similarities between them. So I say, like, in the case of Baltimore, port cities, right, they chose. Sometimes they do it because they have the same name.
Yes.
Sometimes they do it because they have the same interests. So, like, a university town might twin with another university town. And then in June of 2012, the Scottish village of Dull became a sister city with the U.S. town of Boring.
Boring, Oregon.
Yes. And they're trying to promote themselves.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they can get someone from Dull to go to Boring and back and forth, but it's a start, I have to say. In the United States, Toledo, Ohio is twinned with Toledo, Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first city in 1931 to go twin, as it was. Liberal, Kansas, and then Olney, Buckinghamshire, they have a joint pancake day race. They twinned in 1950. And then Tashkent. In Uzbekistan and Seattle were twinned in 1973. I have no idea why. Sometimes they do twinning because they have a significant population in that area, you know, and they twin over that. Sometimes they say they twin for linguistic reasons. And there have also been some breakups.
Some twin breakups.
Yes,
I have those, too.
For political reasons.
Yeah, one of them... I looked up, and it was because it was the most recent in 2017. The mayor of Osaka ended the city's 60-year relationship with San Francisco.
Why?
Due to the erection of a memorial for comfort women in downtown San Francisco. And
okay.
So I was like, hang on, what's that? I looked up the history of comfort women.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing.
It is.
It's like forced... Prostitution/slavery.
Yeah, so in Japan, they had these things, the military, the government started a thing called, they had comfort stations, where women were expected to have sex with the soldiers.
Yep.
And so, of course, there was prostitution. You couldn't just let the GIs go to the
whorehouse. Because there was prostitution.
There was prostitution, but it wasn't them. So they basically abducted women from other Asian countries.
Mm-hmm. And kept them in the...
They told them they were getting like jobs in the factory as a textile worker, and then they were just repeatedly raped.
Why do that?
And broken in that way, and mm-hmm. just...
So in San Francisco, they built a memorial to these women. And then Osaka's upset about it?
Yeah.
Oh, well. What are you going to do? We live in a multicultural country.
I don't know.
We can't short some people.
Are you embarrassed?
Yeah. You know what? They could have said they're sorry.
Yeah.
Not that that carries a lot of weight, but by rejecting, like breaking up the sister relationship, that looks like a huge admission of guilt mm-hmm. in my mind.
Yeah.
It happened.
Yeah, it was the thing that was trying to keep the soldiers happy and keep them from raping other women.
I guess, but also to demoralize those other groups.
Yes, exactly.
Right, and treat them like they're not human beings. Yeah. So I found there was another breakup. In 2013, the Italian cities Milan, Venice, and Turin were with St. Petersburg, and then they broke up with Russia because of their anti-gay legislation. And then also California jumped into it again, saying, hey, if anybody has a sister city in Russia, you may want to reconsider the sister city. I think that both in all of these instances of the breakups are really sad. It's an opportunity, though, that I think for the people in those cities should come together, though, and try to deal with those issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
yeah.
it's a lot of, obviously, a lot of times it's the government and not the people. Mm-hmm. So there may have been individuals in Osaka who were like, yeah, we appreciate this memorial to these women as well. We think mm-hmm. it's horrible. But the government is upset because mm-hmm. I guess, I don't know, they want to pretend like it didn't happen?
Yeah.
Who knows?
They just don't, they're like, let's just move on and not deal with it.
Yeah. So I found a situation here. This is a Portsmouth is looking for a new sister city. So Portsmouth has three sister cities.
Oh.
And one is Zitao, Mexico. And there's another one called Orizaba, Veracruz. And then the third one is Corby, England. And basically, they have a good relationship. The city of Portsmouth has a great relationship with Zitao.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two sister cities haven't really been keeping it up. They haven't been writing. They haven't been calling. They're not, responding to any of their texts or emails or anything like that. So they convened a group that has 45 paid members, and they're trying to look for a new sister city. Mm-hmm. The group is focusing on Ireland because they have a lot of strong Irish and Celtic presence in the area. And apparently they throw a good St. Paddy's Day parade. So they thought, okay, we'll look for a sister city in Ireland. So they're trying to look around. And how do they do this? Well, they put themselves on the website for sister cities.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a personals ad.
Yeah.
So they put themselves out there. Said, it's kind of like a dating site. They said, we'll put our name out there and see what happens.
Do you like long walks on the beach? I've got the beaches.
Yes. So the head of the group said that they're really excited. They don't know what they're going to get, but they're open to any cities mm-hmm. that are available to them. And they're hoping that when they get everything up and running, they're going to have things like youth exchanges. Apparently, Portsmouth at one time helped support an orphanage in Mexico.
Oh, that's good.
They also exchange visitors, students between cities. But they want to like ramp it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to have more action. So there are sister cities that are out there looking for other sister cities. If you're interested, Portsmouth is looking for somebody.
Portsmouth.
I think they're going through
has a really great personality.
Yeah, really great. No kids.
Yeah.
No drugs and alcohol. Clean record.
I like, let's see, there's a lot of cultural events that you can share. I think the National Cherry Blossom Festival in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
Everybody hears about that. Yeah. Everybody goes to it, but you did not know that it's honoring Washington's twin relationship with Tokyo City.
I thought it was just a random gift from the Japanese government. It's actually Tokyo.
Yeah, I thought it was just kind of a diplomacy gift as well. Yeah. But it's there because it's a sister city. And then many twin towns develop business agreements with their partners. For example, in Vermont, Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
It's still around.
They opened a factory in the Republic of Karelia in Russia.
Oh, wow.
And offered the same profit-sharing plan to its Russian employees.
That's cool.
Yeah, so you can really get really creative with this kind of link that you have with another town and have these economic and cultural opportunities.
I've definitely heard of around like sports, like youth sports.
Yeah.
So like I think in Debrecen they had, it was like World Youth Basketball. So they would have, you know, people from the sister cities and whatever come and play games against like the local youth teams there, which I thought was pretty cool.
That is.
You know.
That's really cool. And that's like in Chicago, they have a link with Warsaw, Poland.
Well, Chicago has a huge Polish,
yeah, they have a huge Polish community. And Indianapolis and Monza, Italy. And they both are associated with auto racing. So it's like you can bond over anything.
Yeah, anything that your town is into. Yeah. So what would, okay, for Hoboken, what would you, like, what's Hoboken about? And what city do you think maybe you could connect with, or what kind of city should you connect with?
I would say it's most known for baseball and Frank Sinatra.
Okay. And but does anyone else have that?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so we'd have to get a little more creative there. Right now.
Maybe being on the waterfront?
On the waterfront.
You guys have a nice promenade.
It was a shipping town at one point, but okay. Now it's a...
That's something.
Yeah.
A so shipping
I'm gonna
town.
I'm going to do some research. I'm going to find a sister city. And go to the mayor, Ravi Bala, and say, hey.
And say, yeah, what's going
on? I'm
going
to be your sister city ambassador. How do you like me now?
What is his background? Where is he from?
He is
Where's his family from? Okay.
And he was the first Sikh mayor appointed in, I think, New Jersey.
Okay. So maybe something from his heritage
might
be appropriate as well. Yeah. Why not? Just because he might know more about it.
Well... But still, I want.
Yeah, you would. I was thinking
I'm
too.
The ambassador.
I would like to be the ambassador for the Bronx, and I would like to put forth that Glasgow. I think Glasgow could be a sister city with the Bronx. I've spent some time in Glasgow. I feel it has like a real Bronx attitude.
Bronx
has a Glasgow attitude.
Yeah.
So Glasgow is like the other city in Scotland. It's not Edinburgh. It's not the fancy one with the the high art and the all the festivals and this kind of stuff. It's like, you know, more of a working class city. It was a port city, so you have that element there. It's always had kind of a multicultural aspect to it. I think it's just like a really chill place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Bronx is kind of like, you know, there. So Glasgow's kind of like in the shadow of Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
The Bronx is kind of in the shadow of Manhattan, but we got a lot going on.
Right.
We have a cool accent. They have a cool accent.
You know what? I think this should be a thing that the Hey You Know It franchise should be responsible not only for bringing all kinds of things to our listeners, but for
bringing,
bringing sister cities to our respective
towns. But I think I'd like, instead of sister cities, I think I might go with like friends with Benny's cities. Because I think the sister city seems like it's already been addressed.
Yeah.
We're giving you a little bit more.
Okay.
Friends with
Benny's
city. I think the Bronx is a good looking city.
Mm-hmm.
I think Glasgow is also a good looking city. I think we could have some nice things going on.
Yeah, and we just were cool about it.
Yeah, we don't have to be exclusive.
Yeah.
You could have another, like the Bronx could also maybe hook up with another city, like I don't know.
Yeah.
Toronto or something.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You can.
Sometimes. You know.
Just don't get too serious too fast.
Yeah. We're just taking it easy. It's staying in the friend zone.
Yeah.
But with benefits. So I looked on this a website of Sister Cities International, and they defined a sister city as having a relationship that's broad-based, long-term, between two communities and two countries. Their organization is a nonprofit, and what they help to do is they match cities up, but they also kind of, like, I guess, keep things organizing and keep the flow going. I thought it was really interesting that in order to start a sister city relationship, you have to have the mayor or highest elected official or a podcaster who's interested, I guess.
Yeah.
And the two communities, and you sign an agreement.
Yeah.
Right. And then first, in order to do this, they said you should contact your local sister city organization and talk to them about the process. And then that organization will contact the mayor or whoever it is for you. I don't think we need to do that. I'm taking mine straight to the people.
Yeah.
Straight to the people at Glasgow.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to do this bottom up.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to do a bottom up and then see by the time the mayor hears about it, it'll already be done.
Yeah.
We'll already be tight. You know, they won't even know.
I think
about
that's
it.
Great.
So we could be a sister city is the official term, and there's a friendship city.
Friendship city, that's like.
It's like a step down.
A step down. That's only mayor to mayor. And it's like, who told you could do that?
Exactly.
Oh, we're the people.
Yeah.
We don't, you don't tell us who. who are a sister city is.
We tell you.
Yeah.
We are rogue.
Hey, you know it is a free podcast, free of charge, FOC.
Free as a bird, free falling even. Well, it's free for listeners.
We put a lot of hard work into this.
Editing and online hosting is frankly thirsty work. It gets pretty dry in this studio. And you know we love a tasteful white wine. If you like our style, consider buying the gal a drink. We've added a PayPal donation button to heyyouknowit.com so you can show us some love with a one-time or recurring donation to cover a little something from the vine.
For $5, you'll be hooking us up with a happy hour glass of tasteful white wine, a 4-ounce pour. For a 10 spot, we can split a bottle of wine from the bodega across the street. For $15, we can kick it with a jug, because who are we kidding? For $25, you'll be making our dreams come true with a box of tasteful white wine concealed with a Mylar skin. Box of wine.
I have something to report on here. This was sent in by my husband, Greg Zenon. And I don't know if I've addressed this before in the podcast. Okay. You know, Greg and I love a Renaissance Festival.
You do.
For years, we went to the Maryland Renaissance Festival. We were those fools you see. Not fools, because we weren't dressed as fools. But we were dressed fools who were dressed up.
Fools who were dressed up.
Full regalia, the whole thing.
I used to work at one, by the way.
Yeah, you were a wench.
I was a beverage wench.
Yes. Yeah. So there was a Ren Fair that was held in Connecticut for a couple of years, and now they moved to Massachusetts. And when they moved to Massachusetts, because Greg is from Massachusetts, he was like, oh, massholes, something bad is going to happen. Sure enough, there's a company up there. It's been going on for 20 years. It's O'Connor and McCullough's Hitting and Stabbing Emporium. It's one of these places where you go and throw an axe. You know how they have at the Renaissance. So you can throw a knife. Throw an axe. It's kind of like a silly, fun thing to do.
You know what? Back in the day, it's like nobody said boo about that. But now I'm like, I'm not going anywhere if somebody's throwing an axe.
Well, you don't have to worry about it because apparently somebody saw fit to steal all of their equipment in the night. From a Renaissance festival, what kind of asshole are you? These are people who volunteer. It's like something people do on the side. It's like a little business. So basically, someone came and cased the joint. This is a Renaissance festival. Cased the joint, checked it out, and then in the night, smashed the windows of their truck, stole thousands of dollars worth of throwing weapons. What are you going to do with an axe?
Yeah. Whoa, really? Scary.
But come on. Like, how far are you going to get with that? Like, what are you going to do, a robbery with this?
Wow.
You're going to come in and fling it at someone?
Yeah.
It makes no sense whatsoever. And these aren't like weapons. They're for fun, for show. So it's not, you know what I mean? Like, why would you steal someone's equipment? In any case, so everything is gone. The crossbows are gone. The throwing knives are gone. Probably the little floppy hats that you have to wear to put it on. Like, all the stuff is stolen. So they're doing a fundraiser to get it back again. $5,000 worth of stuff was stolen from them.
That's terrible. What? Yeah, I don't know what to say about people who do that. I mean, they're going to put it in their garage.
That's what I'm saying. Did you need an axe that fucking bad that you couldn't go to Home Depot and get one? These cannot chop or do anything. They're not sharp.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're not, because they're for throwing for fun.
Yeah.
These aren't, like, serious, you know, you're not going to Paul Bunyan your way through anything with this stuff.
You know, some people are just plain old rotten.
And it's mean.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
I know I've heard of some people that go to garage sales so they can look around the house and see what else they can come back and steal later. Later.
What?
Yeah, when the people aren't home, they're like, they check out, because usually the garage doors are open in the suburbs.
Oh, yeah.
So they can see all the stuff that's not for sale and see what it's worth. And then
come back later and rob the place?
Yeah.
That's crazy. So I would never even think of that.
Yeah. I never thought of it either until somebody said that they did it. And I was like, who laughed? Ah, by the way.
Jeez. Why? I mean, come on, people.
I know.
Boo.
Boo and
that's so sad.
It really is.
It's disgusting. Makes me upset when people, you know, when there's theft of, like, personal stuff like that. I'm not saying I enjoy it when people rob a bank.
Yeah.
Or a gigantic warehouse or something like that.
Or Ocean's 11 heist.
Yeah, that's different. This is like somebody's, you know, little side business.
Yeah.
It would be like if someone burst in here and stole our mic. And we're like, ha-ha. It's like, what are you going to do now?
Yeah.
Going to podcast your way to, I don't know. You know?
Yeah, right.
Oh, you got us.
Good luck with that snowball mic.
Yeah, enjoy.
By the way, it's haunted.
Yeah, that's right. It is haunted. Yeah. I forgot. All right, what do you have?
Well, speaking of haunted, I have a Tales from Derek Campfire.
Oh, so Tales from Derek Campfire is a segment where we find tales on the internet of the paranormal, fake lore, folklore, scary stories, urban legends sometimes.
Yes, we tell them around the digital campfire.
Yeah, so gather around. Yeah. Is this a scary one?
I don't know.
Okay.
All right. So I'm not sure where to start, so I'll start with a little background on my story.
Okay.
It was 2012 in Rothschild,
Wisconsin. Oh, wait, this is you giving background?
No,
or
this
the
is
author?
The story.
Okay,
this is the author.
I never know.
Coming in hot.
Okay.
Like that. I found out that the original idea for the movie Poltergeist was based on a house a block over from mine.
Is that true? Do you know anything about Poltergeist?
I don't know.
That's the one where the little girl pressed her face up against the thing and said, they're here.
Yeah, and she got sucked into the static.
I turned that shit off when she got sucked in. Manually, because you had to do it back then. Like, I got up, walked across the room, was like, that's it.
Click.
Yeah.
No, that was a scary one with the clown and the tree. And
I didn't even get that far.
Oh, my God, it's creepy. It explains a lot of phenomenon that happened in my home. My stepfather is diagnosed with brain cancer, and my family and I are looking for a house. So we come up with a house in a nice neighborhood for a steal. It was $1,200 a month. Yeah, that's right, $1,200 for a 4-bed, 3-bath home with everything you could want.
Where was this?
This is in Wisconsin.
Okay, I don't know if that's a good price or not. It sounds suspicious.
Yeah, sounds really low for a month.
Yeah.
For that house.
I feel like that right away is a red flag.
Yeah.
I'd be like, how many murders were committed in this house?
Yeah, it was built recently and was just massive.
Mm.
I have been here a little while and weird things happen, like my stuff going missing, stuff turning on and off, and sounds of movement from different areas of the house. I had 2 siblings, so I paid very little attention to it.
I just
think it's somebody else.
I just have to interject at this point and say, hell no. Mm-hmm. Things turning on and off? Mm-hmm. Nothing has ever turned itself on or off in any of the places I've been in.
You know, but when you have siblings, everyone pranks each other. So you,
like they do?
Yeah. And so you think, oh, they just rigged something.
I don't know. I don't have any siblings, but they sound like the kind of people who need a foot in the ass for doing some shit like that. That's not cool. That's not a prank.
No.
Yeah, okay, good.
Well, so you could see how you could get desensitized.
Yeah. You probably think it's like, you know. Yeah.
Well, on this night,
Sheila turning shit on and off again. Yeah.
On this night, I was home alone at 15 years old. I had my earphones in and I was doing my homework when a black figure came crawling at me from my peripheral.
First of all, no headphones on at home alone.
No.
Unless you're editing a podcast. Mm. No. Because you're just inviting stuff to crawl at you.
It gave me a heart attack, and I tell my black lab, Jake, that's he, and whatever he was, you know, cursing. Well, lo and behold, my dog is with my parents.
So I read that wrong.
He yelled at the dog. Seeing this black thing go across
the
floor,
he thought
it was a dog, and then found out the dog was with the parents the whole time.
Well, how long did that take?
I don't know.
Like, I'm sorry.
Fast forward a couple of weeks.
Huh? Don't fast forward a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
That was it?
They just dropped a bomb.
I just saw some shit on the floor. It's like, meh.
It was just like, oh, that dog, what an asshole. He scared me. And then realized it was not the dog. It was with the parents.
Okay.
Well,
he just put his headphones back on?
Yeah. Fast forward a couple of weeks, and I'm sure that it was just like, put the headphones and then later went out.
Ah, and then was like,
was like,
when he dropped a glass of milk or whatever, like they do.
Fast forward a couple of weeks, I'm in the kitchen making myself a sandwich when I hear something burling down the stairs. I turn around.
Burling? I don't even know what that means.
Well,
we'll find out.
We'll find it.
Okay.
I guess it's a word that you can only use to describe what comes next.
Okay, in Wisconsin.
I turn around, and it rounds the corner from the stairs leading upstairs.
Rounds. I like this.
And there is what I can only describe as an oil-black deformed Spider-Man with no face.
What?
As soon as I made eye contact with it, it crawled at me with such swiftness that I couldn't react. And I'm not going to lie to you guys, I peed myself. I called my best friend crying and waited outside until she picked me up.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Whatever this thing is, it either can't harm or it means no harm.
Or it's building up and
puts
on the fear. Because that's the whole trick. They start low.
Yeah, they start small.
Because they don't have a lot of energy. And the more fear they have in the house, the stronger
they get. That pee probably got it going, too.
It's like nice.
Liquid fear. That's what pee is. All right.
A few days later, I found out about this part of downtown being on a Native American burial ground.
Well, welcome to America.
Yes.
With no respect
yeah.
for people's burial grounds whatsoever.
So fast forward to a few more weeks. I'm sitting in the living room, and I get this feeling of dread, sadness, and defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I hear something running upstairs from the basement. This time, this thing didn't stop to look at me. It just ran at me, and I panicked.
I just booked at him.
I didn't know what to do, but that thing would have been on top of me in 3 seconds. I finally told my mom, and although my stepfather, having cancer and needing treatment, is out of town, that she couldn't leave me home alone anymore. I felt safer even if I had someone with me, even my little siblings.
Jeez.
Don't bring them into it.
Yeah.
Me being a person who liked to be alone, she didn't understand why. I finally told her, thinking she would have thought I was crazy. Her eyes widened. She asked what was wrong. I asked what was wrong. Her response, I have been seeing the same thing, Gabby, and I don't know what to do.
What?
Yeah.
I'm out of here. See ya.
Things just became worse.
It's a rental.
Yeah.
Break that lease.
I haven't been able to find anything on the screeches, so if anyone knows anything, please comment for me.
I like your idea. I think it's something trying to gather enough strength mm-hmm. to manifest itself. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely attached to this house.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah, they moved out of the house.
Oh, thank goodness.
As shortly after the sister claimed to be pushed down the stairs. So, I don't know what it is.
I'm going to guess whatever it is, it's going to continue to gather. Because at first it was crawling on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was, you know,
it
got bigger, then it ran at him.
Down the stairs.
Yeah.
And looked at him.
Yeah.
And then it ran right at him.
So... That's pretty creepy.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Now, I want to tell my... I have a creepy story, too.
You have one, Tails?
Yeah. Originally, I was going to use it for the Unsolved Mysteries, but since they're a scary story. So, this is a story of something. It's called Anjikuni Lake, and it is in rural Canada. And it's a place that is well known for fishing, because there's a lot of fish in the waters there. So this story takes place in 1930, and it's quite famous, and it's unsolved. So it's about this guy named Joe LaBelle, no relationship to Patty.
Oh,
I know. A Canadian fur trapper had an experience, and he was well experienced in mm-hmm. being in the area. He was a capable outdoorsman, and he knew that an Inuit community had formed there, and then when he was going around, he would occasionally visit them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was familiar with their tales of wood spirits that were allegedly malicious in that part of Canada. And also,
malicious wood spirits.
Also, this area is known for the legends of the Wendigo. Yeah.
Okay.
But despite this, whenever, you know, the Inuit tribe saw him, they were always friendly. They welcomed passengers by, even though they were, you know, worried about Wendigo and evil spirits. When they saw other people, they welcomed them to their camp, basically. So LaBelle normally had little cause to feel gripped or by fear or anxiety. But one night, it proved to be different. So it's a full moon, right? And he's heading towards his village, and he senses something eerie.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes that there's no one in the village. Usually there are a lot of dogs
mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm.
There are about 30 adults and children in the area cooking food and this kind of stuff. But there seems to be no
living
movement.
Their lives.
Yeah, doing their thing.
Yeah.
There seems to be no movement whatsoever. And then he realizes also that the only sounds that he hears are coming from him walking. So he approaches the video and yells at a greeting.
The video.
He approaches the... Why did I say video? He approaches the village.
Village, okay.
He approaches the village and yells out a greeting, and the only thing that responds is his own echo, right? Nobody comes out. Mm. So he said, he goes to investigate. Really, something must be going on here. So normal signs of life were completely absent. There was no laughter, no conversation, and there was no smoke coming from the chimneys. So this is in an area where without smoke and fire, you're not going to make it,
mm-hmm.
right?
And there's no smoke, there's no fire.
So he saw a fire in the distance near the village. So
okay.
he went to go check it out, and it was clear that it had been burning for a very, very long time. It looks like someone had started preparing a meal, but they never got to finish it.
Ooh.
Right? And there's still no people around, no sign of people. So he goes further into the village, hoping to bump into somebody, and no one. So mm-hmm. then he's like, okay, I'll look in the houses. So he starts to explore around the houses, couldn't find anything. He did see that the homes were
They were empty, but they were well-stocked with food. All their weapons were there. Still no sign of the dogs at this point. And he couldn't figure out. He didn't see any footprints. So this is an experienced tracker. He doesn't see any footprints leading away from the village. There's no indication people ran or, you know, took things
no
with them.
No struggle. No.
No signs of a struggle. Yeah. No signs of a departure. Everything was there. Food, arms, clothing. Everything that people would need if they were going to flee was left behind. Then further investigation, he found a couple of things that really freaked him out. So he looked around and...
I'm scared.
I know. He starts to realize more and more how strange it is that there are no dogs. It seemed that they had all starved to death.
What?
So I guess he found the corpses of the dogs as he was investigating the area.
Wouldn't they go somewhere for a snack?
And he didn't know what to do, so he went to the telegraph office to, you know, tell people what was going on. So once he got to the telegraph office, he reported his encounter, and he was like, you guys got to send the Mounties to come check this out, to launch an investigation. So on the way there, the mounted police, who were heading from, you know, the telegraph place back, they found two guys, another trapper and his son. And when he questioned, they said they saw a large cylindrical object that transformed into a bullet shape before heading towards the town. But they didn't know what it was. So unconfirmed reports also claim that when the Mounties arrived at the village, they found that every grave in the burial ground had been opened up and emptied of its contents.
Ooh.
And that the headstones had been neatly piled up, so it couldn't have been animals. So they conducted a thorough investigation.
What was the cylinder?
They don't know. They conducted a thorough investigation, and they couldn't find anything to give them a clue as to what happened. They tried to ask questions for people in the area. No one had anything to say. And it was their conclusion that the people had been missing for about 8 weeks before the tracker, LaBelle, arrived. So everybody had been gone already for some time. There was time for the burning food to be discovered, and then they found the dogs themselves. But they couldn't figure out why someone would have killed the dogs or left the dogs behind. And to this day, it's still an unsolved mystery. It's like Roanoke. So they don't know where the people went or what happened. Well, I guess we'll never find out.
Wow. Creepy.
There's so many stories about like these kind of disappearances, like in the Arctic. It's always, you can never figure out what truly
happened. Yeah, there is a lot of very strange, mysterious.
I think in some cases, when I've done a little research, maybe it was disease or a cold snap or something, or who knows.
Yeah, but where are the bodies? There would be a sign, like, if they all died at once, the bodies would have been evidence either of them behind or being dragged away.
Yeah,
or other
so
eating them.
In this, I mean, in the Arctic, where these guys are, the bodies would be frozen. So even if animals had come and, you know, gnawed at the bodies, there would be evidence of that, too.
Yeah.
Because no animal destroys all of the it doesn't clean up after the meal.
Right.
All right. And what's with the empty graves and the headstones
piled up? All right. My theory is UFO comes down and just snatches them all up, including the dead bodies, because they want to...
why do the dogs behind?
Because they're not human.
So they took the people, but then also... They did the little grave robbing to get some extra bodies. They just need the bodies.
Yeah, because they probably have some kind of, you know, they've been studying them for ages. And they're like, okay, time to do the old the poke and prod and cut them open.
That old chestnut. Yeah. I'm going with Wendigo.
You're going with Wendigo.
Okay. I'm going with a shapeshifter was involved in somehow. And I think that this thing with those
a
two
shapeshifter,
guys.
A shapeshifter? What do we do with all the bodies? Eat them?
I don't know. Shift into something else.
What, like, shift, what do you, the
well,
Wendigo
shift
shows
into
up?
One massive Inuit and just get out of there? Like, can a Wendigo, like, assemble all the bodies together, like a transformer, and just book it out?
Oh, so the whole town was made up of a Wendigo?
I'm saying, the whole
town.
And
they were all, like, pieces of Wendigo.
Yeah, they're all little Wendigo pieces.
And then they just...
Bits of Wendigo, if you will.
So it was like a transformer.
Yes,
that sucked
like
up
a transformer.
Together, and then they walked out, like a giant one.
Or like Voltron. That's what I'm saying. That's what I think happened here.
All right. So, listeners, if you have any ideas and you want to just settle it for us, email us at heyyouknowit@gmail.com. UFO or Wendigo or what your theory is.
What happened at Anjikuni Lake?
Anjikuni Lake.
In rural Nunavut, Canada.
Okay.
Along the Kazan River, not to be confused with any other similar location. All right, what do you have?
So we're here with our resident intuitive, Marcy Currier.
Yeah.
And for our long-awaited segment, backed by popular demand, Hey, You Will Know It.
And we're doing some advice on advice on advice on advice.
Yes.
I think Marcy will pull a card. So what's the advice for today?
Okay, so the advice is, Dear Amy, I have a large extended family. I was close to my cousin and my aunts growing up, but now I feel like the black sheep of the family. I am gay and I have political and religious beliefs that are different from the rest of my conservative family.
Okay. This is, yeah, there are a lot of these out there.
While no one has ever been overtly mean or critical to my face, I am friends with many of my relatives on social media, and I'm routinely given the cold shoulder in this forum. My aunts post warm messages to the other nieces and nephews. They've never posted anything to me. My cousins constantly post back and forth to each other.
Well, they don't like you.
If I add my comments to the conversation, no one responds back. I often leave friendly comments on their photos and updates.
What could possibly be the question at the end of this?
Even though they never acknowledge me.
They don't like
you. Well, this is hurtful. I understand that my lifestyle is very foreign to them.
Gay? It's new.
Well, they're all conservative.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like such a class. Okay.
I'm content to leave things at arm's length. I'm also embarrassed that it bugs me at all. My mother is very close to her siblings and their children, but she has no idea that they treat me this way.
Wait, what way?
They ignore her on social media. They talk to everybody else in the family.
But also,
on social
media,
but not her.
Maybe the problem is that she's gay. She could be a dick. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I'm not ready to, like, blame them.
Yeah.
And I also wonder if she's... It sounds. I guess she said she's interacting with them.
But they don't. They're not getting back to her.
But she might also be very hypersensitive, and they don't know what they're walking on eggshells around her. Anyway,
okay, so then, weirdly enough, my relatives seem to be paying close attention to my social media and often tell my mom about updates and photos I've posted, which she appreciates.
Well, that's nice.
I want to tell her that these relatives are two-faced, but I'm not sure I need to make that problem her problem. If the problem of me feeling snubbed on social media is easily solved by removing them from my friends list, advice.
So she answered her own question, number
one. This
is a
tough one.
Well, yeah, so she wants to interact with her family, but they don't, but they lurk and they tell her mother
what
she's posting.
But it doesn't sound like they're saying bad, like, so, not that I'm defending either side, but it could be a thing where they're like, if we say anything, she's going to be upset about it.
That's,
so let's just not say anything.
That was my sense of it. I'm really curious what the, who's the person, Amy. Yeah. I want to hear what Amy has to say about
Amy says, your relatives are lurking. Lurkers note what other people post but decline to like or comment on those posts. The fact that they are aware of what your doings and report them positively to your mother means they are paying attention.
Your doings?
Yeah, you should post whatever and however you want. You might feel better about this dynamic if you become more of a lurker on your family's posts. Yes, unfriend them or hide their posts if you want to, but don't let them change you. I don't know how it would help matters for you to report the stuff to your mother.
Is that you saying, I don't know, or
no.
Is that the columnist?
I don't know if that's a columnist.
I think we need to pull a card on this columnist.
I think so. Would it pull a card? Could we pull a card on this? Like, what?
Well,
what is
do you guys have anything before we go into, like, psychic intuitive advice?
I mean, I think that this, I always say have an open dialogue, right? So talk to your family and extended family and see what the situation is. It sounds like they're trying to be very cautious and not...
I feel like they might be being respectful.
Yeah, like they don't want to get into your life. You're out, for whatever reason, sometimes for people, like, they're out there being gay and I don't want to, like, stop that.
Yeah,
or put,
well,
like, a...
So the whole family is really conservative.
Yeah.
She's a black sheep. She's gay and she has different political beliefs than them.
But they know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they're just trying to be like, don't spook her.
All right.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, what's really going on? What's
so let's pull a card for, like, what's really going on.
What's
here?
Really the family
happening?
Dynamic?
This guy.
So the Hanged Man reverse is sort of like being just stuck. I feel like, and that makes sense that this person is, it, like, kind of putting themselves into this weird position by just not doing anything and just kind of going like, you know?
Yeah.
So what would the advice be? The Nine of Wands comes up, which is sort of like lurk back.
Okay. So lurk back.
But Ace of Swords is communicate, like you said.
Yeah.
Like, just say, like, speak up.
Speak up and say something about it instead of just...
And come from a vulnerable place. Queen of Cups, come from a vulnerable place where you're connecting with your feelings. And if there's a more empathetic or sympathetic person in the family, you know, someone that they kind of have more of a feeling... like, I've got a couple aunts that I'm like, oh, I could talk to you more about what's going on with me than some of my other aunts. You know what I mean? And then Nine of Pentacles is also like, get over this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to live your life and you're an independent, confident person, who cares what these people, they're not even doing anything. Like, they're literally doing nothing. And if the big thing here is that I think part of adulthood, like, on every level, is when you learn to stop giving people attention that aren't giving you attention back. Right? Like, I think there's a certain level of maturity. The Eight of Cups is like, let it all go. Just walk away from this bullshit. Take a break.
If they want to interact with her, they will, ostensibly, otherwise. But these are always hard for me because I'm not a family person.
And the Devil comes up, which says to me, I think that we're also kind of onto something, that there's maybe more to the story or something about this person that is adding and contributing to the scenario.
Okay.
Yeah.
But overall, it doesn't feel like the question is giving us all the information that we need. That's the Three of Pentacles reversed. And that what's happening is being reported in a subjective way that may not be the whole story.
This is so we're giving advice on something with it.
Yeah.
We're
not getting the full thing. It's hard with identity things sometimes because I know this as an African-American and a woman and this and that and the other. Sometimes you try to figure out what is it that people don't like about me.
I know.
And sometimes it could just be that I'm a dick.
Yep.
Like, it could be none of those other things about identity, or it could be one part of my identity. They don't like libertarians.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. They're okay with black people and women, but they don't like that.
Right. There's one guy who talks in a way that is very corporate, and it rubs me the wrong way. Everything else about him is nice. And I'm just like, stop focusing on that, his speech.
Yeah.
Because it's just...
And, like, probably, like, if he picks that up from you, he's never going to think that that might be the thing.
Yeah.
No, because how could that be offensive? That
because it's just the, it's like his normal way of talking.
You know what I mean? Circle back.
And that's just what's happening all the time. So, overall, final card for this situation, Ace of Cups, everything is resolved with love.
Woo.
There we go.
Wow. Okay. Boom. Perfect. Thank you. Cool.
Got the four R's. Rehearse, record, rinse, or repair. 209 West 40th Street. Hashtag Bump Life NYC.
Well, I have some. We're still in the midst of summer.
Yes. It hasn't been so bad this year.
No.
All right, fingers crossed, though. I'd say it's like this, temperate.
Yeah, so, you know, let's revisit top tips for a safe summer weekend.
Okay.
Okay, so you're hanging out, you're enjoying the summer.
As you do.
One thing everybody has to get clear on, because already people are complaining about this.
Tube tops. I've had it up to here. Secure your
Between
business.
Between here and here.
Yeah. Secure your business is all I'm saying.
Well, it's food safety. There's mishandled food or food that's been left out too long.
Ugh.
And it's given everyone a little bit of a stomach rumble.
You're talking about a deviled egg that's been left out in the noonday sun.
Yes.
Unaccompanied by one of those little anti-fly umbrella things.
Yeah. Already tummy trouble coming in because food is too warm.
Yeah. And if there's an oil slick on it, don't eat it.
Ew.
A rainbow of any kind, don't eat it.
Where are you seeing rainbows on food?
When stuff has been left out for too long, it feels like it starts to melt a little bit. You know what I'm talking about?
You get that greasy rainbow.
Yeah.
Taste the greasy rainbow.
Taste the greasy rainbow.
So for food safety, refrigerate all perishable food.
Booze, huh? Keep that cold.
Perishable food within 2 hours. And 1 hour if the temperature outside is above 90 degrees. So you're having a picnic or you're outside.
Put ice. I always tell people, if I'm doing something like potato salad or deviled eggs, something like that, you can put it into a layer of ice.
Yeah.
On the bottom and something. Put your container on top and then cover it over with one of those little anti-fly umbrellas.
Yes. And then, please, to guard against cross-contamination of bacteria, keep uncooked meats away from other foods.
Keep uncooked meats away from human sight.
Yeah.
For Christ's sake. Keep it over at the grill. Mm-hmm. Really? Who would leave out just some uncooked meats?
To put by the grill. They put them by the grill and they're like, anyone want a burger? It's here. Tell me, I'll cook it.
No. Cook everything.
Grill safety. Emergency physicians see firsthand the dangers associated with an outdoor grill.
Mm, so do the guests. I've never seen a grill accident, though, I have to be. Like, most of the people I know are pretty conscientious about that.
Well, First of all, you should thoroughly clean a grill of any dust and grease. Some people are just lighting them up.
No, they just, I think a lot of people think that the fire cleanses it.
Yeah, they do. Think the fire cleanses it. Yeah. Check the tubes leading to the burner for any blockages of insects or food grease.
Ew.
It's nasty.
That is gross. Why would there be, how many insects are there in this tube?
Do not use a grill in a garage or breezeway or a carport or porch.
Oh, God. You know they will.
Anywhere that can catch fire. Yeah. So, watch it. And water safety, when you're on the water, to prevent drowning, avoid alcohol when swimming or boating.
Come on. But you know what? Where I'm from, every year, 4th of July, it was always some drunk person fell overboard. Like some tourist comes in, gets drunk. Falls in, and the water is not even that deep or that rushing, but they're loaded.
Yeah.
And then by the time you find them, it's over.
Yep.
It's hard, though, because boating is synonymous with getting loaded.
I know. That's why you get on a yacht, people.
Yes! Get on a big boat.
Yeah, and blast that yacht rock.
Yes.
You know, yacht rock is Michael McDonald.
Christopher Cross.
Yes.
That kind of stuff.
Take Me Away.
Yeah. Mellow Gold. Yeah. AM Gold.
So, yes, wear a life jacket when you listen to your yacht rock on your
yacht. Yacht rock.
And make sure children are supervised, please, even by a hot tub.
Yeah, or just leave them home, away from the water, if you're going to be getting loaded.
Yeah.
It never fails.
Then you got the sun. Look up at the sun in the sky, and wear your sunscreen. Shades. SPF.
I think that people don't do, I mean, I wear sunblock all the time. Mm-hmm. I carry it with me all the time. I don't know why, it's just not a thing for people.
Yeah, they don't.
And I don't get burnt that easily. I see, sometimes I've been at the beach and I see white people and I'm like, what happened? Did you not know you were going to be here?
Yeah,
Did you forget that you were pale and not really engineered at all to be outside for more than 5 minutes?
I know. Plus, with certain people, they have the gene issue, I have.
But you know about it. You wear a hat.
I have heat intolerance. I diagnose myself with heat intolerance. You know, it is a true thing. There is a genetic thing where you can't physically tolerate.
But you get burned as well.
And I get burned. Yeah. Yes,
but it's not a surprise when it happens, is it? And you're usually prepared for it.
And
I'm just talking about some people that I see that I'm like, what are you? Like, I feel like, hey, just use by sunblock. In fact, you know what? Fuck it. Just go home.
Yeah.
Go inside. You know, go to the beach at night. That's probably a good. You know, that's probably what you can handle.
Right.
I just feel it. Just looks so ridiculous.
Yes, and here, I can't believe we have to say this in this day and age, but do not drink and drive or travel with anyone who's been drinking.
Are people still doing that?
Yeah, apparently.
I feel like there's no, like, obviously when we were growing up, there wasn't Uber and stuff like this, but now there's everything.
Yeah, there's no excuse.
There's no excuse. You can leave your car pretty much anywhere now and get picked up by somebody. Yeah, you can go get it the next day.
Yeah, wear your seatbelts at all times. Oh, hey.
Who's not wearing a seatbelt?
You know what? I was on a brand new bus today.
How was it? Did it have that brand new bus smell?
It did. It smelled like a brand new bus, and they had seatbelts, and I put it on.
On the bus?
Yes.
Wow.
And I was like, the oldest person on the bus wearing a seatbelt.
Of course. What?
The kids weren't wearing them.
What direction were the seats facing?
They were all facing forward like a normal bus.
Okay.
But we all had seatbelts. They were individual seats, like pushed together.
That sounds fancy.
It was nice.
Was it cushioned or something? Was it more like a coach bus?
No, it wasn't cushy like that. It was actually kind of uncomfortable because the seats weren't as cushy as other seats. But it was a nice bus.
But you were strapped into an uncomfortable seat.
I tell you, because this driver had some kind of lead foot and brake problem.
Maybe it's only on his or her bus that they have seatbelts.
Because he kept speeding up and jamming on the brakes and throwing us all around. But I had my seatbelt on.
It was a new bus. You're
breaking
it in. So I just wanted to report on this. We talked about this before, Zealandia. The new continent.
Oh, yes.
All right. So apparently it's been hiding in plain sight for a long time. The geologists...
This was an old continent that...
It sunk.
Yeah.
Basically. Which in my mind is no excuse for us not seeing it. It wasn't that low. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a pretty major thing. And it's just like, eh.
Where is it?
Oh, I'm going to get to it.
Okay.
All right. So... Usually we're taught that there are 7 continents, right? Africa, Asia, Antarctica, Australia, Europe, North America, and South America. But geologically, there are 6, right? So Europe and Asia are a supercontinent of Eurasia. So this Zealandia is kind of in the crook between these plates, basically. So it's not a sudden discovery. It's that it's a gradual realization. Come on, guys.
It's dawning on me. There's another continent over here on the left.
Slowly, I'm kind of coming to the idea that there might be another one here. So the concept of Zealandia isn't new, but it was coined in 1995, and it was never intended to be a new continent. It was used to describe New Zealand and New Caledonia and a collection of submerged pieces that broke off from Gondwana, you know, Gondwana land, that we learned about that. And they came up with the term because of convenience.
All right.
But there are four criteria for deeming something a continent.
Okay. Right?
So one is it has to be land that pokes up relatively high from the ocean floor. It's extremely scientific.
Yes.
Land that pokes up. It has to have three kinds of rock, igneous, metamorphic, and sedimentary. It has to be a thicker, less dense section of crust compared to the surrounding ocean floor. So it must be recognizable as a separate thing from the ocean floor. Okay.
Gotcha.
And then there has to be an area large enough to be considered a continent rather than a microcontinent or a continental fragment. And I don't know how they come up with
it. I don't know either. So
it's like mountain versus hill.
All right.
That kind of thing.
Okay.
So they determined that New Zealand and New Caledonia fit the bill for items 1, 2, and 3. And then they did more research and they thought, okay, since they're saying it's continental because it was considered a collection of microcontinents or bits and pieces of former continents, but they think it's big enough and unified enough to be kind of its own thing.
Okay.
So Zealandia spans about the area of Greater India, which is huge, including Madagascar, New Guinea, and Greenland or other pieces of crust. So it definitely is big enough.
Wow.
The authors point out that while India is big enough to be a continent, Zealandia... And it's now a part of Eurasia because it's collided and stuck to it. Zealandia, meanwhile, has not smashed into Australia
yet.
So it's still, it's kind of its own thing. And it's separated from the continent or the continental block of Australia by a trough that's 15 miles wide.
Sometimes words look weird.
Yeah, but because they have it here, the Cato Trough. And I was like, okay. So another part of it is that the Zealandia, it's divided. It's on two different tectonic plates. So it's on the Australian plate and the Pacific plate. Mm-hmm. So then they're trying to figure out, like, what part of the world is it actually in. But that's only according to our... you know, us and the way that we think about countries. But geologically, I think this is a completely new thing.
Okay.
I'm saying it's a continent.
All right. Fine.
And I'm excited about it.
Why don't you stick a flag there?
Yeah.
Name it the continent.
So today we can only see about 5% of it. So that's why it took so long for them to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right. So the scientific value of classifying it as a continent is more than just an extra name on a list. It's the continent that a continent can be so submerged and yet unfragmented makes it a useful, thought-provoking, geodynamic end member in exploring the cohesion and breakup of continental crust. So, of course, the UN has gotten in on this, and they're not sure if it is a continent or not, and who does it belong to?
Well, I'd like it to belong probably to me. And you. belong to, hey, you
we'll
know.
We'll take it.
And then we'll have a sister continent.
Or New Zealand.
Yeah.
Where it is. I like that idea of a sister continent. You don't have a lot of options, but it's out there.
Yeah.
But I like that. So, yeah, Zealandia.
Yeah.
I'm only interested in, like, what dinosaurs and things like that were there.
Oh.
So that's kind of my, you know, when I think about the geologic record, I mean, obviously, probably no people were there at the time when
this
thing was
up. Well, we got to find out what spoils are there first.
Yeah, we'll see what's there.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks.